In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
The Timeline is a Blue Wire podcast.
Appreciate you, folks. Everybody count!
Welcome to the Timeline of Phoenix Suns podcast. We have a lot to get to. Sam, let's start with this. How are you doing?
Oh, that's an easy one. I'm good.
First question.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of them to sift through. I think it's a good time for a mailbag because people have questions now. The Suns roster is more or less finalized. There's still one open roster spot. There are training camp invites to be doled out. But for the most part, I think we're at that point where we can start to kind of solidify things and talk about the season to come.
Yeah, we can mentally picture what it's going to look like at this point because we understand what the roster is. We got a lot of questions. Thank you to everyone that gave us questions. I'm just going to go in order of when we receive these questions, and we're going to try to get through as many as we can within about an hour. So thank you to everyone once again. Let's start right away. At Ben in the fourth quarter, which is our friend Thick Boy, said, will Crowder and CP3 make us one of the most annoying teams to play against in the league? What do you think, Sam?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next question. So. we're going to be very annoying. It's Crowder and CP3 and obviously Javon Carter still there. Mm-hmm. Etuan Moore has a little bit of a bite to him.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of guys.
Booker.
Yeah, and Devin Booker.
Yeah, he's gotten on some guys' nerves before.
Yeah, no,
I'll say this, though. Sure. I think just Chris Paul alone makes you one of the most annoying teams 100%. To play against in the league. We all remember when he pointed out the one player that had his jersey untucked and changed the course of an entire game. That's just Chris Paul. It doesn't take anybody else to make you annoying. So
I think we're going to see kind of like a fascinating tonal shift where people are rooting for the Suns during the regular season, at least when we're not playing their favorite team, because it's like, oh, look, it's the Suns. Yeah. They haven't made the playoffs in 10 years. Let them have this. But then once we get into the playoffs, I think it's going to shift. And it's going to be like, fuck Chris Paul. Chris Paul's whiny, all the usual stuff. But yeah.
I can't wait. Next question at Art of the Dial said, which player is most likely to replicate their bubble performance this year? And then he listed the players. Payne, Saric, Carter and Cam Johnson. I thought this was a really interesting question. My first thought was Cameron Johnson. I think that we're going to get a little bit more into Cameron Johnson later and what his role is going to look like going forward. I just think if you just start out with Payne and Carter alone, their shooting performances were almost impossible to replicate going forward. Impossible. I'll just call it impossible. Cameron Payne shot over 50%. I think Carter was close to 50% or around there at the bubble. So that's difficult for them. I think Saric could get close. Like in order, I would say Cameron Johnson most likely, Saric second most likely, and then somewhere down at the bottom, a combination of both Cameron Payne and Javon Carter. But I just think Saric could do that based on his role. Cameron Johnson is most likely because what he did in the bubble, I don't think was anything like totally exceptional. I think it all came together in a great way for him where his defense and his shooting came together at the right time. But I think he could replicate that going forward. What do you think?
Yeah, my initial impression, I agree with you, but my initial impression was Dario because I think Dario is going to be that guy who maybe grows more comfortable in his role and retains that role. And I mean, look, with Cam, I do agree that the shooting and the rebounding and the defense all came together. He's not going to start the season starting at power forward. I'm willing to bet a lot on it. So I don't know if there's more of an adjustment period for him where we see him struggle with that a little bit, but yeah, Dario would be my bet of these four, I think.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, and I think we'll get a little bit more into the starters if we get to that question later here. At this underscore league, one of his questions, he asked a few. He said, if voted on by the same body that decides coach of the year, is Monty considered a top 15 coach? If yes, is he top 10? So basically the meat of this question is Monty considered a top 15 coach by the league at large or top 10 at this point? And I would argue that after the bubble, he probably is. I think it's difficult to guess the perceptions of other people, especially the people who vote for awards. But he did win coach of the bubble, and there was a lot of really great coaches there. I think any coach that can lead a team to an 8-game winning streak when things really matter can be considered one of the better coaches in the league. But it's really difficult for me to guess how other people perceive him at this point. A lot of that will depend on how well they play. I think there's a lot more pressure on a coach that is coaching, just like the players, when the team is expected to be good than when they're expected to be bad. There's sort of a nothing to lose attitude there when it came to the bubble. Now with Chris Paul, with Jay Crowder, and the expectations that comes with those players, I think his sort of fate and how he's perceived is going to be viewed a lot differently. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the other thing about coaching is just that it's so interpersonal. Like, the difference between coaching and being a GM, you can kind of get away. Now, granted, we didn't see this with, say, Ryan McDonough, but as a GM, you can kind of get away with being the whole cold, calculating, you know, math nerd, and have a really good reputation. Like, look at a guy like Sam Presti or Danny Ainge, who are considered these great GMs that basically just treat their players arguably like shit, or at least, you know, like assets. That's all they are. Whereas with coaching, it's so much about just your personal reputation. There's so much more to it than just the X's and O's. And so I think you look at the fact that just no one I've seen has ever had anything bad to say about Monty Williams. Yeah, I think if you actually went around and polled the rest of the coaches or the media or whoever in the league about who the top 15 coaches are, no doubt, I think he would be an above average coach. But I don't think he has the track record of playoff success that he would be like in the top 5 or top 10 or anything. Not at this point.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty accurate. But I do think that he's improved. A lot of the things that he was criticized for when he was last a coach, a head coach, he's improved a lot at.
And 100%.
That could go a long ways towards his reputation.
It does. But
getting better and better.
I guess the last thing I want to say about it, though, is like if I was voting, and I don't have this power or this authority, but if I were voting on coaches right now and who I think the best coaches in the league are based on where I've made mistakes in the past, you need a playoff track record. You just can't do it without it. Like I was convinced that Mike Budenholzer was maybe the best coach in the league. And now I wouldn't say that anymore, because it's one thing to implement. We've talked about this before. It's one thing to implement a system that is going to lead you to regular season success, but it's an entirely different thing to be able to have the flexibility in a playoff setting in a best of seven series where you can throw out your system if needed and make changes on the fly. And a coach like Bud proved that he wasn't capable of doing that. And therefore he's very clearly not the best coach in the NBA. With Monty, I'd like to believe he can do that. He certainly covered the first base, which is install a system in Phoenix that works in the regular season. They did that last year. It worked. They're going to do something similar roughly this year, and I think it's going to work again. But until we see him in a playoff setting, I just don't know. Is he going to make those game-to-game adjustments? I don't know.
Yeah, the regular season is checkers. The postseason is chess. Coaching just matters so much more in the postseason. It is nice, if the Suns make the playoffs, to have a player like Chris Paul in this scenario. Giannis, for all he's good at, doesn't really have the experience in the NBA to be able to change on the fly as quickly as someone like Chris Paul could. And I think that will help a little bit, assuming they make the playoffs, which I think they will. At Trent01, by the way, I'm just reading your ats. Sorry if I get them wrong. How do you guys see the power forward position turning out? And then he said Crowder or Saric. First of all, Saric is a center. I will always say that. Look, I think he can play backup.
Both,
yeah, he's both. I think he can play backup 4 minutes. I don't like him as the starting four, personally, unless he finds a way to be a little bit more mobile. I think speed around DeAndre Ayton is more important than size at this point. I think it's Crowder. We both talked about it before, Sam, that we think Crowder is starting. But I will say this. I spent the last week to 2 weeks obsessively watching Chris Paul film from the last two seasons specifically. And the way that Chris Paul worked with Danilo Gallinari last season in OKC makes me feel like he would actually prefer to play with Cameron Johnson over Crowder, because Cameron Johnson is more capable of shooting on the move a little bit.
Yeah.
Coming around screens, setting screens, dropping back in a pick and pop, that kind of thing. Crowder prefers to be standing still and then shooting a standstill shot. So I think there actually may be a chance by the end of the season that Cameron Johnson somehow breaks into that starting lineup. At the very least, I think there's a chance that Chris Paul is pulled a little early in favor of Devin Booker controlling maybe the entire second half of the first quarter and then matching up some extra minutes with Chris Paul and Cameron Johnson, maybe a little bit more, as much as maximizing that as much as possible, because I think they're going to actually work really, really well together. What do you think?
Well, I was going to say exactly what you just said there. I think there is a decent chance that whether it's early on in the season or halfway through the season, they kind of realize, okay, campaign, not working out, you know, maybe not awful, not as bad as Ilya Kobo or something, but like not working out as intended just to run the offense on his own. So they're like, okay, we need to stagger Booker and Paul a little bit. So let's pull Chris Paul out, like, you know, 4 or 5 minutes into the first quarter, play some point book, and then bring Chris Paul back in with some of the subs, one of whom would be Cam Johnson. And you kind of see them together a lot in that sort of way. But to answer the original question, I mean, Jay Crowder was brought in to be the starting power forward. I'm very confident of it. Otherwise, I think he had like plenty of other teams that he could have chosen, including like another team that is poised to be very good in Dallas, that supposedly, according to the rumors, he chose us over. So I think I'm almost sure they gave him a guarantee of a starting spot.
Yeah. Yeah. And if they didn't, I still think he'll likely start at the beginning, just because defensively he's built to guard fours more than Cameron Johnson is. And Cameron Johnson can put a lot of effort in and he'll be in the right spot, but he just can get pushed around a little bit more than Crowder can. And that's no fault of his. His frame is what makes him a good shooter in a lot of ways. So Crowder's just not going to get pushed around a lot. So if we have to play guys with bigger forwards, I think Crowder's going to get that. There's a lot of forwards that are stars in the NBA, and you'd rather Crowder defend them than Cameron Johnson. At AN underscore GOAT 445 said, what are reasonable stats for Ayton to average next season? What do you think?
Well, if he doesn't average at least 30 points and 25 rebounds, then
yeah, four blocks, yeah.
Then I'm not giving him a max contract. No, I think... So I think what we've said about Ayton before and what I'm going to hold him to now is like he doesn't statistically have to get that much better to be a max player. That, in fact, that's just a fact that he doesn't have to do that. Like Bam Adebayo has worse statistics than DeAndre Ayton across the board except for assists. He does get assists. And he's worthy of his max contract that he just signed, I think. So for Ayton, it's less about stats. I mean, I'll put it this way. I think he could very easily average 20 and 12 and two blocks next year and be a max contract player, or he could very easily average 20 and 12 and two blocks next year and not be a max contract player. And the thing that makes the difference are some of the intangibles. First of all, just aggression. Like if there's anything statistically that I want him to improve on, the first number that I'm circling there is 2.3 free throw attempts per game last year. That is pitiful. That cannot continue. And if he has another season averaging a number close to that, I absolutely do not want to give him anything close to a max contract. He needs to be at least in the 4 to 5 free throw attempt per game range, because it means he's cutting out some of those mid-range jumpers and opting to actually attack the rim, maybe put the ball on the floor a little bit, and work to get himself to the free throw line as any efficient modern big needs to do. So that's the first thing I'm looking at. But just for overall stats, like I'm not expecting 25 points per game from him or anything. I think that would be unreasonable. I think there's a pretty efficient way for him to just get up there a little bit to like 20 or 21.
No matter how much I think about it, I struggle to care about his offensive stats no matter what. Now, that's assuming we're not including rebounding in that, because I do want him to be close to one of the best rebounders in the NBA, because he's capable of that as early as next season. That means top five rebounders in the NBA. I'd like him to be there. Points-wise, it just... Just about anything that you do, if a center is taking too many shots, it's likely that those shots are less valuable than if other people took those shots in a lot of cases. So if he's just getting dunks at the rim or layups at the rim, that's great. That's really all I want him to do offensively. That's totally fine. What I want to see is improvements defensively for him no matter what. Yes, I'd like to see him get free throws. Yes, I'd like to see him dunk it a little bit more than just try to lay it in or shoot a floater. But more important than any of that for him is what you see. And it's still difficult to measure defense in statistics. So more than anything else, it's what I see on the court. And what I want to see is continued improvement on defense. He's done a good job improving year over year so far. If he can continue on that improvement, he can get close to one of the best big man defenders in the NBA. He's mobile enough, he's big enough, and he's got the athleticism to do it. So I think that's the most important thing for me going forward. As far as offensive role, I'd like it to remain small. It's important to me offensively that he rolls hard to the rim over and over and over again, regardless of whether or not he gets the ball. And that's the type of thing that you don't see in the statistics. Like, if you just look at his stats and he's averaging 16 points and 13 rebounds or whatever, which would be great. But part of that is because every time he rolls to the rim, three guys are swarming him because they're afraid of him dunking it. And that opens up shooters. That does not go into the stats for him. So that, you know, that's the type of thing that matters more. So it's difficult for me to hinge anything on.
You could call
it. Yeah, exactly.
Instead of a screen assist, it's kind of a similar principle.
Yeah, I love that. So for me, it's just less about specifically what the box score says at the end of the season and more about what I see on the court. And I know that a lot of people feel that way, but I struggle to care about the offense still, no matter what. Free throws would be nice, especially with no more Kelly Oubre, because there's not a lot of guys that are about to get a lot of free throws on this team. I think Chris Paul and Devin Booker are obvious ones, but beyond that, not sure who. Maybe, like, there's a good chance that Dario Saric averages the third most free throws on this team next season. That's like a realistic possibility, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not looking at the totals right now. How many did Dario even average last season?
Not much, but in the bubble, I think that he found a way in that specific role to shoot more free throws than he was previously, which I think he was a lot more efficient.
He was sixth on the team overall last season per game, but three of the guys in front of him were Frank Kaminsky, Ricky Rubio, and Kelly Oubre.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's one thing. I know we haven't quite gotten into maybe what we're worried about or things that could be bad going forward. I think one of the big things that we're going to talk about a lot is free throws. If DeAndre Ayton can't be the guy getting to the free throw line a little bit more, there's just not going to be a lot of them. And for a team that's going to be really good at shooting free throws, getting more of them would help a lot. So
yeah, because
that'll be on him.
You look at this bench too, or if like campaign needs to catch fire, because you look at this bench and those other guys like Etuan Moore and Langston Galloway are great that they just brought in. They can attack closeouts, but like they're shooters.
They're going to shoot.
They're not.
And we want them to shoot. Like that's that's what we brought them in for. So you don't draw a lot of free throws without dribbling. You have to dribble the ball, and that's why Dario Saric was getting more in the bubble than he was previously. He was handling the ball a lot more. Let's see. At Dane Bjorklund, I believe. His question, don't you think we'd be better off starting Cam over Crowder? We'd still have three great defenders in our lineup, Paul Bridges and Ayton, and a more potent offensive lineup. So we just touched on this, but I want to say something now. If we start the season with Jay Crowder in the starting lineup, and then we have Cameron Johnson on the bench, I just want to tell people right now, please don't use net rating stats to say Cameron Johnson should start over Jay Crowder right away. Remember that Jay Crowder will probably be on the floor when the best offensive player from the other team is on the floor, meaning that he has more of a bigger role defensively, and that if Cameron Johnson is coming off the bench and playing against more bench players, maybe he matches minutes with Chris Paul a little bit more. Those net ratings are going to be through the roof. That's something that happens with Chris Paul on benches commonly. And that doesn't necessarily mean that Cam needs to start over Jay Crowder right away. If Jay Crowder is guarding LeBron in a game over and over and over again,
yeah,
there's a good chance that the other team is going to be a lot better when Jay Crowder is on the floor than when he's not.
Or Jay Crowder at power forward. I mean, he'll be guarding Anthony Davis with that right. Lakers team, whereas Cam exactly. Johnson is coming out to guard Markieff Morris or something.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. So we just can't use those net rating stats right away. We just have to make sure that we understand the context of that right away, because I think Jay Crowder is... Like, look, if we look at the team right now, there's a lot of players that we're going to be really attached to. If we have to find one guy that's going to take a beating from fans, maybe a little more than he deserves, I'd have to pick Jay Crowder as that guy right now, because he can get a little cold from three. And I think for a lot of fans, it's a little harder to recognize what people bring defensively than what they bring offensively. Offense is easy mm-hmm. to see. So I'll say that, I think there's a chance that Cameron Johnson can earn that starting line spot going forward. And that's a good thing. But I just don't think that... I think we have to understand those net rating stats early, because I have a feeling they're gonna look really good for Cameron Johnson at the beginning of the season, maybe not as good for Crowder. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, if there's one guy, it's going to be Jay Crowder, who people hate a little bit, you know? I mean, Memphis fans still hate Jay Crowder. Granted, it's a bit of a different situation. Memphis wasn't trying to compete last year, exactly. Well, I guess they were at the end, but no one expected that they would be able to compete. And we're going in with this expectation of we are a playoff team. So if Crowder doesn't lay it all out there every night with full effort and full 110% hustle, people are going to dog him, because he's definitely going to have those games where he shoots 9 threes from the corner and only like 2 go in.
Right, right. So he still brings something. Just remember that, especially if he's guarding the best player on the other team.
There's going to be troll tweets directed at Boss Man. I guarantee it.
I'm already ready to go over the top defending him going forward, because he's exactly the type of player that I like, and I think that commonly becomes a little underappreciated if he's playing well. You know, if he's not doing well, if he's missing defensive assignments and giving up backdoor cuts and stuff like that Kelly Oubre did, then of course we have to point that out too, because we did for Oubre. Let's see. Surging Suns, our friend Serge, he said, do you think Moore or Galloway will be ahead of either Javon or Payne in the rotation? This is an interesting question. I have some thoughts. What do you think, Sam?
This is a really interesting question, because I've got no fucking clue. I'm going to be honest with you. I think these are four guys who are on a very even playing field, and each of them has their strengths. You know, like, you can visualize Cam, hypothetically, is the guy who can create for himself the best. He's the only one of the four who can kind of hit a pull-up three. Javon is obviously the best defender. And then the other two guys, though, they're shooters just like Javon is, but they can run off screens and do fancy shooting stuff that Javon with his little arms can't do. I don't really know. What do you think?
If I were Monty Williams, Langston Galloway would be number one in the rotation out of these guys for me, because there were 26 players that basically shot 6 threes a game at over 40% in the entire NBA, and Langston Galloway was one of them. There's not a lot of guys that have proven, this was last season, there's not a lot of guys that have proven to be that good at shooting threes at that level of volume. And if it were me, I would do my best to try to stagger Devin Booker and Chris Paul and try to limit the amount of minutes that the Suns play without one of those two guys on the court, and then put them in at the end to close together. And if I were to do that, that would mean Galloway could play well with both of those guys. So to be that sort of linking guy, like if Chris Paul comes out and Galloway comes in, a lot of pressure on Devin Booker to be the point guard at that point, not a lot of secondary creation. Maybe you could bring Saric in at that point as well. But then if when Devin Booker comes out and Galloway maybe stays in and Chris Paul comes in, that's still a good fit. So if I had to pick any of these guys, I say Galloway is number one right now, just based on those shooting stats alone.
So those
but
those
matchups
minutes,
will matter, though. Matchups will matter.
For sure. Those minutes when neither CP3 nor Booker are on the floor, mm-hmm. those are the only minutes that I'm worried about this team the entire season, unless there
right.
are injuries.
And that's Cameron Payne right now. It just is, right?
I know.
It has to be.
But so... I mean, how many of those minutes do we think there actually will be per game?
I hope not a lot. You know, like if it's 7 or 8 minutes a game,
yeah.
that's ideal.
Like a small early stretch. a small early stretch at the beginning of the second quarter and like a small early stretch in the late third quarter or something, you know, but like never in clutch time and never like you said, maybe 7 or 8 minutes per game. I don't think we can survive more than that unless Cam really proves to be who we hope he is and is like our, I don't know, Dennis Schroeder type 15 point per game.
Can you imagine?
I mean, that would be insane. Because
it would be insane. And you know what? He's got Chris Paul, right? He's got a mentor now.
I know. If Cam Payne becomes that, then the Suns are like the best offensive team in the league. They're a top three seed, I think. They're like, they don't have a single
rating. The net rating for the starting lineup, if they just play with, you know, with Chris Paul and Devin Booker are playing together all the time, is going to be through the roof, hopefully. Right.
But my worry currently is, the net rating with Booker and Paul at the same time is going to be through the roof. But then there's going to be 8 or 10 minutes a game where it's just campaign running the show. And that net rating is going to be like minus 15 or minus 20 or something. That's my worry right now. And again, it's not that campaign's a bad player. It's just that he's maybe being put into a role a little bit hastily. I don't know. We'll see.
I just think in general, having a guy that has to be guarded, just you cannot leave him at the 3-point line will matter a lot if you try to stagger those minutes. But otherwise, it's got to be Cameron Payne. So that's just kind of how it's going to look. At Titan J said, how many unique starting lineups will there be next season? I want to throw out, just for the sake of this question, let's just throw out injuries. Let's just try not to factor in the starting lineups that are just for injuries. Just based on basketball, everyone's healthy. This is who Monty chooses to start. I think there's probably going to be 2. Maybe 3 if they do something crazy for like the Lakers and put Saric in the starting lineup. But I think some sort of combination of Crowder or Cameron Johnson throughout the season could be the starting power forward. What do you think?
I mean, if we're throwing out injuries, the 1, the 2, and the 5 are always going to stay the same. It's always going to be CP3, Book, and Ayton. So it's just that 3 and 4. I think there's 4 combinations that you can make. Either McHale and Crowder, which is what we think it's going to be. McHale and Cam, which is what other people are arguing for. Or you could argue, you know, you could go with Crowder at the 3 and Cam at the 4. Or you could go with, you know, if for some reason you, I don't know, like, I don't know what the circumstances would be that you bench McHale Bridges for a combination of Crowder and Cam, but I could conceivably see arguing for that if, like, I could hear you groaning quietly in the background.
It's tough.
Or like if you want to go big one night, you could go with Crowder at the 3 and Saric at the 4. That's a matchup dependent thing. I think you could reasonably argue for any of those 4 is my point.
Yeah, that's probably pretty accurate, I would say. But I think most likely, I think the starters are relatively obvious on this team in a way that maybe they weren't before. Although, you know, thinking back at the beginning of before the beginning of last season, we were very sure about Dario Saric as the starting power forward. I mean, and I can't even say power forward when I talk about him anymore. I just automatically say center. And then that changed. So we'll see. You know, different players can earn their right in that starting lineup. So we'll see what happens. But I think most likely, 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there's no long-term contracts. And now Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. Football is back in full swing. You might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right. What do you think? This is at D-backs 2020 Cham 1. What do you think Booker's average stat line is going to look like? What do you think, Sam?
Basically the same. I don't think it's going to... Yeah. I mean, if you look at this roster, you basically gave up some points in swapping out Kelly Oubre for Crowder. Because Jay Crowder's not going to average 19 points per game. He's just not. He's probably going to be like 12 to 14 or something, if I had to guess. But then you got some points back in swapping Rubio for Chris Paul. And those are basically the only major substitutions you made. I think everyone else is going to be pretty even with who they're coming in to replace. Mm-hmm. I mean, Booker was already uber efficient last year. Like, he was already close to 50-40. I think he's going to be there again. Well, I guess he started out the season close to 50-40, and then he ended, what, like 35-36% from three. He dipped down a little bit. I don't know. Every year I want to say this is going to be the year that Devin Booker shoots 40% from three, and then it doesn't happen, and he never hits seven threes in a game or whatever. So I'm not going to bet on that, but I'm just going to say his efficiency stays about the same, his points per game stay about the same. He's going to have a really good season, and he's just going to get more of a positive narrative around him by virtue of the fact that the Suns are winning. But I still think he's going to get his like 26-6 and not much more than that.
We're going to have to do an over-under podcast soon.
Yep.
And I think that number is going to be really interesting. But I can tell you, I'm probably going to pick the over because I think there's a chance that he averages around 30 points next season. I think there's a chance. And yes, maybe that's expecting a lot. But I feel like something happened in the bubble where Monty Williams figured out that putting the ball in Devin Booker's hands more and allowing him to run more and more pick and rolls made him better, and it made the entire team better. And that's essentially point Book in a way, even if there's a point guard next to him, which in a lot of cases, it was Rubio or it was Cam Payne in the bubble. Now it could be Chris Paul in some scenarios, but it could also be now Cameron Johnson and Langston Galloway are in the corners, and that's a lot of space for a guy like Devin Booker. And I think there's a chance that he really goes off in specific areas of this season and could get those points close to 30 points a game. But I think it's a reasonable thing to guess that he would remain the same, maybe slightly more efficient, which would be insane. But I think that's a reasonable guess. Let's see. At Surging Suns once again said, what improvements are you looking for from Ayton outside of points and rebounds? I think, Sam, you and I are about to begin working on something for this that could probably answer that question better than you and I can answer right now. Is that okay to tease right now?
Well, now we have to do it. I mean, that's the thing about you saying it on a podcast is it was like something in the very early stages that we had talked about doing, and now we have to do it. So
yeah, thanks. Good. I like that kind of pressure.
Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah, and I think we talked about it a little bit earlier. Sam had specific things offensively and defensively, and I just talked specifically about his defense. But I think there's more to talk about with DeAndre Ayton than we can probably fit in a mailbag podcast right now that I think we should focus on more later. At @profexsuns_suns said, would love to hear you guys talk about the potential of the bench trio of Jalen Smith, Dario Saric, and Cameron Johnson. I'm fascinated by the size they all possess. I really like this question, and I really liked picturing these guys playing together. I think someone like Jay Crowder, you want to be playing the power forward. Somebody like Dario Saric, you potentially want to be playing center, as I've talked about. Jalen Smith is a bit of an unknown in this specific equation. But I think Cameron Johnson is the type of player that, like, I'd be comfortable with him playing shooting guard to power forward, basically. because,
really?
yes, he's tall. But I wouldn't worry too much about him covering most shooting guards because his size will help out, and he does not like totally outmatched athletically against a lot of people in the NBA. But the shooting just translates across all those positions. But basically what I'm saying is, yes, he sort of thrived at the power forward, but I don't think that what the skills that he possesses don't make him any worse at the small forward. I actually think he'll do fine there and actually do really great. So I think it's really fascinating. But for me, this all depends on how well Jalen Smith plays in his rookie season. There's a chance that even if he'll be a really good player later, that he's not very good this first season, and that's okay. That's kind of my expectation around most rookies, and that's okay. But what do you think?
Yeah, I'm just prepared for him to not play a lot. Like, I don't think this particular trio is one that we're going to see a ton, but I could be proven wrong, especially if there are injuries. I'm prepared for like a 8 to 10 minute per game rookie season average from Jalen Smith, where he plays like every other game, you know? Like, that kind of feels right to me. And
yeah,
he really has to earn the minutes beyond that. I mean, that's the tough thing about sharing a position with DeAndre Ayton, who's going to, is going to be soaking up like automatically 32 to 35 minutes a game.
I'll say this. As I talked about earlier, I've watched a lot of Chris Paul film over the last 2 weeks. And something that Chris Paul really likes is guys who can get up above the rim and catch the ball above the rim. Now, for the Suns, that's really only DeAndre Ayton right now.
Damian Jones does it too.
Damian Jones is there, and maybe he'll get minutes just based off that alone. But Jalen Smith also can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a chance that just that type of chemistry he has with guys like that alone could help him a lot. Like, when I was watching a lot of film of Chris Paul, and what I noticed a lot of is assists to Nerlens Noel, who's not that good of a player. And mind you, I think he's fine. Like, he's not terrible. But I think what Chris Paul makes Nerlens Noel is a lot more than what somebody else would make Nerlens Noel on a team. And that's what I think of when I think of Damian Jones, and that's what I think of when I think of Jalen Smith. But there was also a lot of lobs to guys like Hamidou Diallo or even SGA, guys who can get above the rim relatively well. And I think about the Suns, and I think maybe we're going to see a lot more lobs caught by somebody like Mikal Bridges on those weak side cuts, because that's just where Chris Paul is going to put the ball and make him go up and get it with those long arms. And I think that's good for him. But there's not a lot of other guys that can do that. Devin Booker is not really that kind of guy. He's got his own strengths, so it's fine. Jay Crowder is not going to get over the rim for a lob, at least not often. So maybe Jalen Smith gets more minutes based off that alone. He has to prove it on defense, so I think that's a big, big thing for him. All right. At the Vengeance 06 said, if you had to choose one player on the Suns to win an NBA award next season, who would that player be and what would the award be? Devin Booker, MVP. Pretty easy for me. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Well, I had another one that I thought of too.
Okay.
For Devin to win MVP, it really is pretty tough. Like,
they'd
for
be Devin, the one or two seed. They'd have to be.
I was going to say top three, but you're probably right. Like, they need to be, they need to be like a 1-2 seed.
It needs to be obvious.
And he needs to like average 30 points per game. And like,
it'd be a Kevin Durant season, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what it would take. That would be phenomenal.
Which would be fun.
That would be really, really fun. The other guy that I thought of, like, if the Suns finish as a top three or top four seed and they're on pace for like twice as many wins as they have losses, I think you could see Mikal Bridges make an all-defensive team this year. Yeah. I think this could be the year for that. I actually went back and looked at the history, and the last time the Suns had a player on an all-defense team was Rajah Bell in 2008 when they went 55-27. So exactly what I'm talking about. Like, one of the best teams in the Western Conference, but I think that team was still like the third seed. Like, they weren't the absolute best team. And that was enough for Rajah to get credited as like...
Yeah.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, national writers, the people who vote on this, they already know that Mikal Bridges is a great defender. Like, the guys in the know already know. But, like, sometimes it just takes being on national TV and, like, getting into a playoff series.
I actually think that is the most likely one, too, because they also like a little bit of the hipstery picks, if you will, right? You know what I mean? They want to pick the guy that maybe less people have been talking about, and I think that would be Mikal Bridges. And in a lot of ways, picking players for these types of awards was specifically to give them the recognition that maybe they deserved and no other thing gave them. We remember the All-NBA recognition for Goran Dragic. I think that probably came likely because he didn't make the All-Star team. If he had made the All-Star team, I think there's a chance he just wouldn't have made the All-NBA team because, you know, it felt like a little bit of a makeup call, if you will. And I do think that there's like a bit of a narrative building around Mikal Bridges that the types of guys who vote for those awards might actually vote for him. And I think that's probably taking from a question that we're going to cover later, but I think that's actually the most likely one. I don't think that the Coach of the Year awards matter that much. I don't know. It doesn't seem like the Coach of the Year is never the best coaches to me, so I don't really care if Monty wins that. I don't know if you feel any way about that.
I mean, the only way he wins it is if they win, I was going to say 60-win, like a 60-win pace.
Yeah.
I don't know what numbers correlate with what anymore because I can't.
52 or something like that.
Yeah, I can't do the quick math. But yeah, like a 55-win season in a 72-game season.
Yeah.
Or something. You know, like that'd they need insane. To be the one seed or the two seed or something.
All right. Next question. At Prime Yems. What kind of potential do you think the Suns have to add a potential? Oh, so this is a question basically saying, is it possible for the Suns to add a third star or a fourth star, if you will, and keep DeAndre Ayton? And basically, who could they target if they wanted to do that? I really don't.
This year?
I don't really see any scenario where you could do this that in a way that it would make sense, because you'd have to give up Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, probably both of them.
Yeah.
I just
and you
don't really
you just
it.
Don't have the contract. Like, if he's talking about this year, you just don't have the contracts to
yeah
match.
It'd have to be like Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, and then you'd have to throw in somebody that makes a little bit more, somebody like Jay Crowder or Dario Saric,
right?
And it would get really complicated, and this is part of the problems with having a guy that makes $41 million. Those problems not as big when you start to see how good they're going to look, but there's not a lot of flexibility to do something like that. If you're starting to talk about maybe trading, you know, if you do want to talk about trading DeAndre Ayton, which we're not doing right now, maybe you could get a third star at that point. But is it worth it? I think that's going to be the question. A lot of that will depend on how they look out of the gates, I think. Let's see. He also mentioned Miles Turner and Aaron Gordon as potential guys there. I'd rather have Mikal Bridges than either of those guys.
Agreed.
Going forward. And even Cameron Johnson, like, he's going to be on a rookie deal
Miles
until he's
Turner,
26.
First of all.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. No. None of those are exciting to me. All right. At Jay, it'll be interesting to see what stars are available this season. I think there's always something unpredictable that happens. That'll be a fun thing to watch. At Jay Morales 310 said, what are the chances DeAndre Ayton turns into an all-star, and what is DeAndre Ayton's ceiling? I think he means this season, right? I don't know if he means turning into an all-star ever in his career. I think there's a good chance he's an all-star at some point in his career. And I think there's even a small chance he's an all-star this season, but I think the most likely scenario, if the Suns are really good, is they get two all-stars, and they're Chris Paul and Devin Booker. Chris Paul's 11th all-star, by the way, and Devin Booker's second. So I think it would be hard for him this season unless one of those guys misses a lot of time and they're still really good. But what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's a spot open. Like, the West is really hard, don't get me wrong. But that's mostly because there are a lot of good guards and forwards in the West. Rudy Gobert was an all-star last year. And Rudy Gobert is a great player. But, like,
right.
If the Suns are ahead of the Jazz in the standings,
yeah,
and DeAndre Ayton has objectively a better stat line than Rudy Gobert, why wouldn't he get that spot? You know? Like, those are a couple of ifs. Like, those need to happen. But I could totally see him being an all-star this year, to be honest. Like, if DeAndre Ayton is averaging 20 and 12 and the Suns are the fourth seed, you're going to give it to Gobert over him? I don't know.
Yeah, the next question by Groovier Space was, what's the earliest you could see Ayton having an all-star season? And I think the obvious answer to that question is this season.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I don't think it's a better than 50% chance of happening.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't bet on it happening, but it's definitely in the realm of possibilities.
Yeah, I think so too. And as far as the question on his ceiling, I think that's really difficult to say. Like, I think if you want to say top five center in the NBA, that's possible. Best center in the NBA?
He already kind of is that.
Yeah, exactly. Best center in the NBA is, I think, a little hard because Jokic is incredible. Like, one of the best players in the NBA. And Joel Embiid is incredible, one of the best players in the NBA. And even Bam Adebayo, who knows what his ceiling could be if he continues to get better. But, you know, if you said that third best center in the NBA next season, I don't think that's completely insane. I don't know that it's possible still. It's an interesting question. We'll see. And I think we'll talk more about that later. It's a conversation I think that's going to come up a lot on this podcast. At Don's Bread said, what's your favorite Air Bud movie and why is it the one where they go to space?
Is that, I don't fucking know. Is that one of the Air Buddies one or is it the original Air Bud? I have to look it up.
Now I'm afraid to say this, but I've never seen an Air Bud movie, so.
Ever?
No.
Not even the original?
Not even the original.
Oh, okay. Luckily, there's an IMDb page on the ABCU, which, of course, for those at home, is the Air Bud Cinematic Universe.
Oh, no. The ABCU. That's bad. Look, I've never seen one, and I probably will never watch one. Although, I would consider having a few drinks and watching the Air Bud Goes to Space movie with all of our Twitter friends at some point.
Wait a second. Are all of these movies in the same universe, or is this just a user-made list? Have you ever heard of Most Valuable Primate?
Oh, my God. what sport is that? Is that...
this one appears to be hockey.
Oh, my God.
But there was a skateboarding one released the year after.
No. This is so bad. That's so bad.
That's definitely not made by the same people, though. Anyway, what was the question again? I'm just glad that Air Bud went to space before Fast and Furious.
Yeah,
that's pretty.
Maybe
impressive.
They'll see him there. Maybe we'll learn that the Fast and Furious universe and the ABCU actually exists within the same universe once they go to space and they see Air Bud in like a dog spacesuit, I imagine.
I mean, there's no reason for them not to.
Yeah. He also asked, not as fun, what's the worst case scenario for this team?
The worst
can
case
we throw
scenario...
out? Can we just throw out like torn ACLs and not say something like that? I know you were going to probably go there right away, but like, let's say everyone says reasonably healthy, not like Chris Paul plays every game 40 minutes a game, but like reasonably healthy. What's the worst case scenario? My first thought is the seventh or eighth seed, or the seventh, eighth, or ninth seed, and then losing a play-in game or something like that is like the worst possible scenario. But what do you think?
Yeah, like Jay Crowder shoots like 37% from the field, and Chris Paul says that DeAndre Ayton isn't allowed to come hang out at his crib because he's not putting in enough effort at practices, stuff like that. I don't actually think like the locker room is going to implode. I just don't see that with this team. Everyone seems like just very stable.
Yeah.
Like not level-headed. That's not the word I want to use for it because I don't think this is a particularly level-headed bunch.
Yeah.
But they're not going to blow up at each other, I don't think. The one little thing I do have my own questions about is like I think it's abundantly clear that Chris Paul wants to play with Devin Booker and vice versa, that they want to play with each other. That's why this happened. I do have a little thing in the back of my head that says, does Chris Paul actually want to play with DeAndre Ayton, or is he just sort of going to tolerate him? And I think that's going to be an interesting relationship to kind of look at, but I wouldn't know. I haven't seen them interact.
Yeah. Here's what I will say about James Jones. He traded an unhappy Trevor Ariza like 2.5 months into a season, and I don't think he's afraid to do that if somebody is causing a problem. So I'm not super, super worried about that. I appreciate that he's willing to take the heat, even if it means he's being made fun of by the previous general manager of the Suns. At Edmund the Slayer said, why is Mike so mean to me? Also, congrats on signing everyone I wanted on the Mavs. What he's referring to is him and I talked recently, and I yelled at him about how much better I think Seth Curry is for the Mavs than Josh Richardson, personally. And I didn't realize it would have been, like, it's a controversial opinion on, like, Mavs Twitter. This is something I learned. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that? Here's what I think. Just to explain my perspective. The spacing that Seth Curry provided for the Mavericks is underappreciated by so many people, especially Mavs fans, because they got so used to seeing a team that had good spacing. Me, when I watch the Mavs, I'm just like, wow, Luka Doncic has so much space to get to the rim because nobody can leave Seth Curry, whether he's moving or just standing 35 feet away from the rim. And I think Josh Richardson, as good as he is at shooting, you can leave him a little bit and get back to him in time to contest it because he's not the same type of shooter that Seth Curry is. So even though he'll provide a little bit more on defense, I think the lack of spacing that is going to come with replacing Seth Curry basically, my theory is the net ratings with Seth Curry and Josh Richardson will show that Seth Curry was actually better, even if the actual raw numbers don't really look like that at the end of the season. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a good chance of that. Josh Richardson is one of those funny players where it's like, I kind of didn't check in on him all season long because I wasn't that interested in monitoring the Sixers box score stats, you know? Right. So like he had that good year in Miami a couple years ago before the trade where he averaged, yeah, I think like 17 points per game. And so I, you know, I looked at his page at one point and I was like, yeah, he probably averaged like, he's a young player, probably got better, you know, probably averaged like 18 points per game. Right. And then I looked, he averaged 13.5 points per game, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. And didn't shoot as well as Seth Curry did. Now, obviously, a lot of that is just there are fewer touches in that offense with, you know, Tobias Harris and Al Horford, obviously, and Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. But, yeah, I don't think that's an obvious upgrade necessarily, yeah, for Dallas, for sure.
It's going to be interesting to monitor that because I don't know. I really like Seth Curry. And I think he made a big... I don't think it's a coincidence that... Daryl Morey immediately tried to move mountains to get Seth Curry on his team because that type of spacing is underrated. All right, at Marlerman? I'm going to guess at Marlerman. With all the new shooters in the fold, how many three-pointers are the Suns going to be taking this season? A lot, I hope.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing at a different question down the page. okay. I hope for a lot, too. I
don't know, 35, 40? That's like, I would hope something like that. I don't know.
Well, I looked it up. I forgot the number, but I did look it up, so I should get half the credit. looking it up,
it's like
again.
It was like 30-something, right?
Yeah, they took 32 last year, and that was 21st in the NBA by volume, which isn't it crazy that we've arrived at that point? It used to be like Steve Nash's Suns took 23s a game and led the league by far. Right. Yeah, I think they get up to maybe 35 and like league average or something, but the thing is Chris Paul and Devin Booker take so many mid-range shots, like neither of these guys are going to go out there and take like 15 threes in a game. They're just not going to do that. So I think that holds you back enough from being like a top 10 team in three-point volume, but I do think they're going to be a much more efficient three-point shooting team. They're just not going to be the team that goes out there and bombs away 50 times a game.
Yeah, I think they'll take a lot. I hope they'll take a lot. At its Captain Koala said, who is the worst player you would trade Ayton for?
This is a dangerous question. Yeah, and I feel like I know who...
This is bait. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't really thought that through.
Yeah, you have.
They would know. I wouldn't... If I had to picture trading Ayton, which I'll be honest, I have, and it's not necessarily because I don't like him. It's just trying to think of their trade value. I've traded everyone on this team in my mind to try and figure out who I would trade them for. And not a lot of people for Devin Booker, as you can imagine. And for DeAndre Ayton, that is a little bit bigger of a pool of players to pick from, but I still don't think... It would have to be a very good player. I'll say that. It would be a really good young player, potential future all-star, or like a star, like an absolute star. And even then... It would have to be like there would have to be chemistry reasons that would lead to that. Like I wouldn't just trade him for no reason because I think you have a lot to learn about what he can be with Chris Paul on this team, and you have to give him a chance there, obviously.
Yeah, and I think the only way I do it is if because like you say a potential future all-star, but that's what DeAndre is. Obviously, it's exactly. Just how afraid are you of the max contract coming in a couple years? Right. And so I think you only trade him if like Jalen Smith is so good that he could be a starting center like next year or the year after, and you have the opportunity to flip DeAndre for a similarly amazing player but at small forward or power forward, or your next point guard after Chris Paul. I don't really know. I don't think it's really worth exploring this right now. But yeah. So we're basically punting there and not giving you an answer because we don't want to be yelled at.
Yeah. And I honestly... Like, I don't know that there's a single player in the league I could say that people wouldn't get mad at. Like, if I said LeBron, it'd be a smaller percentage of people that would be mad. But there would still be a few people that are mad. At this underscore league said, a couple mailbags ago, I asked about Šarić running more pick and rolls, and it was kind of dismissed. Sorry, didn't mean to dismiss that. Do you think we'll see a more Šarić as a pick and roll ball handler, basically? And then he talks about how it looks good. And it does. It's like one of the best points per possession plays for this team. But I think it's such a small sample size, and it was deployed in scenarios against teams where it made a lot of sense. Like, they used it really well. So I think that you should do it a little bit more than you did before, just because Saric found a good role as more of a distributor. But I think we talked a lot about it. If they're staggering lineups and Chris Paul or Devin Booker are on the floor, maybe those guys should have the ball a little bit more.
Whoa,
than Dario.
He's not kidding. I had to look it up.
Yeah, it's really good. Really
it's
good
a
numbers.
Sample size of 19 possessions.
Yeah.
So very, very small. But in those possessions, Saric shot 10 for 15 from the field, scored 1.37 points per possession, which is 98th percentile in efficiency, according to Synergy. That's crazy. It's a very small sample size.
Yeah. And he did do that with Kaminsky in the bubble. I will say, like, to be able to be that successful with Kaminsky on the floor, I think matters, and maybe Jalen Smith can come in and be as effective as Kaminsky, which isn't a big task, and they could still do something like that. But I think, I wouldn't build an offense around it. I'd say that even if it is good, I think the sample size is small, and the way they deployed it was so smart that they should continue to deploy it the way they were. And if it works well, do it more. I think there wouldn't be a problem with it. He also made a point of saying that he could be sort of like Bam, or maybe he's not running a pick and roll, but he is doing more holding the ball at the elbow. I like that.
There's good cutters. I mean, imagine putting, I mean, I know Mikal Bridges is going to start, but say you've got a lineup where you've got Mikal Bridges cutting and you've got either a Galloway or a Moore kind of running around the wings off a screen. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you could do there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's interesting. And somebody else, Suns_Central, said, will the lack of guard playmaking off the bench turn Dario into a discount Jokic? And yeah, I think that we saw that. And that's kind of interesting. And yeah, I think that he could. I just think a lot of it depends on how the minutes shake out on this team.
I'm going to be curious for that over-under episode, because we talked about it earlier, where you're going to set the... I think we need to do is over under assists for Dario, because he's never averaged more than 2.6, I think, is his career high. But like, even in a smaller sample size of minutes this year, I could see a way for him to get up to like 3.5 or 4. I don't know.
Yeah. That's an interesting one. We got to write that one down so we don't forget it. He did also ask us an over under question. This league, over under 6.5 threes made in a single game for Booker. You just got to go under on that for me. But maybe we'll actually put that one in there and see. I think we'd all go under. At this point, it's not going to happen. He can have 100 points and somehow less than 7 3-pointers still. At Luka Doncic News.
This is the one I was laughing at earlier.
Are you scared of the Mavs? Let me say this.
No. He didn't say the Mavs.
Scared of Mavs?
Yeah,
that's true.
Almost as if you have to read it with a Slovenian accent.
I don't know if I could do that without being offensive, so I'm trying not to. Let me say this. I think they got worse. So no, not really.
Wait, explain yourself.
I like Seth Curry more than I like Josh Richardson, and KP is currently injured.
What else did they do? Did they do anything else?
They added a lot of rookies, and you know. And I don't really, like, people are like, well, maybe Tyrell Terry could make up for Seth Curry.
No,
if you're relying on Tyrell Terry to make up for Seth Curry, you're a huge step behind already.
Yep,
huge step behind.
Exactly.
So I think they got worse. And look,
Tyrell Terry
could get a lot better.
Could be great.
Yeah.
In 3 years.
Exactly. But I think for next season alone, I think they got worse.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And so much of it is dependent on how good Luka Doncic is, though. Because if he just explodes, then they could be incredible. But you know, without KP being healthy, and, you know, the Suns having now the best clutch player versus them maybe having the worst clutch lineups, I'm not super, super worried about them. I'm less worried about them than I would have been had they just done nothing this offseason. At Mike Notham said, what are non-starting lineups you're most excited to see this season? His two favorite are the Clamps lineup, which is CP3, Javon Carter, Mikal Bridges, Jay Crowder, and DeAndre Ayton, which... how beautiful is that one?
That's my answer right there.
I know. I'm so excited about that one too. And then a 5-out lineup with Booker, Galloway, Moore, Cam, and Dario. which is another fascinating one. I think those are pretty obvious ones. I'm going to throw out another one, just some sort of combination of Booker, Jay Crowder, Cameron Johnson, Mikal Bridges, and DeAndre Ayton. Just Booker, just Wings and Ayton, mm-hmm. just to see what that looks like. Mm-hmm. There's a chance it's really bad, right? And it doesn't really work.
Why?
Well, because I think you're giving up a little speed with that kind of lineup, you know, and that could be a problem. But I think defensively it could be fascinating. That's like the type of thing that could end up playing some minutes in the playoffs and look really amazing. And also there's not a lot of secondary playmaking. But I think it could be really fun defensively. And I think the other ones that he said were really fun to think about too. And just in general, the starting lineup that has Jay Crowder with Cameron Johnson in that place, offensively, you could do a lot of really interesting stuff with, I still said this last season, but I think it matters even more now, with Cameron Johnson, Devin Booker, off the ball, setting screens for each other. I think they should do a little bit more of that. And I watched a lot of just sort of these staggered double pick and rolls with Chris Paul, where he had one roller and one shooter setting the screen for him, basically staggered. He went around it, the roller rolled, the pick and pop guy popped out to the rim. And the combination of CP3 getting to the rim, staying at the three-point line, being a threat from the mid-range, the roller and the pop, that's always something that's amazing. And Jay Crowder, he can do that, but he's not going to do it with the efficiency that Cameron Johnson can. So some sort of combination of Chris Paul, Cameron Johnson, and DeAndre Ayton is exciting to me too. So I'd like to see that. Even actually Dario Saric at the power forward, I think, could do some of the stuff that Gallinari was doing there too.
Hmm.
All right, let's see. At this underscore league, another question. Favorite Westbrook destination between Knicks and Bulls? Westbrook belongs on the Knicks. And that's just how I've felt for a while now. It's destiny. What do you think?
It wouldn't be that bad.
No, I think they just need a team that could justify it.
Like, they need something to justify the Obi Toppin pick. Because Obi isn't a bad player. No. Obi isn't a bad player, but they need someone to get him the ball. Right. They don't have anyone who can get him the ball. It's like what you were saying about earlier about CP3, like what he could do with players like Nerlens Noel versus what other players could do with Nerlens Noel. Like, Obi Toppin is a high-level finisher who is going to have a terrible rookie season as the Knicks roster currently stands. Because if you go out there with the idea that RJ Barrett and Alec Burks, I love Alec Burks, everyone should know that, but like, if those are going to be your facilitators to Obi Toppin, you already lost. You're looking at another 15-win season.
Especially Russ, with the lack of spacing they have.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Russ would be, you need something there. Why not?
Yeah. And Russ likes a good role, man. Like, actually, they would make a pretty beast.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That would be pretty hard to defend.
He would be his new Steven Adams for sure.
Yep. Mm-hmm. At Miranda 100 Lease said, between Carter, Payne, Moore, and Galloway, who do you think will have more minutes this season? Who ends with less? I guess we touched on that. I think Galloway is number one to start the season, but it so much depends, and I think both of us probably feel this way, so much depends on how they play during the season. Mm-hmm. And I think that those minutes will be earned more than anything else. But he also asked, what's the type of season DeAndre Ayton would have to pull out that would make you guys say, give this man the max? And then he said, in his mind, he would have to become an all-defense guy and get to the free throw line consistently. And I think we've talked about that a lot so far, and maybe more on previous episodes too.
Yeah, notice how many people have this same question, not because it's a bad question, but just because it weighs on everyone's mind. You can tell. You can tell people are nervous.
Well, this is the season. Once the season's over, they can offer him an extension. So, you know, the timer starts as soon as the last game is played. And I'm still scared of giving any big man the max, I'll be honest. It just scares me. You have to be really, 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 really good at defense in order to justify getting a max at the defense alone. I was arguing with the guy that said I was mean to him earlier on Twitter, and it was about defense, and I was just saying defense just costs less. It's more affordable to get defenders than it is to get offensive players, and he asked for an example, and I just said MKG just signed for a minimum. And he's still a good defensive player, but he can't do anything on offense.
Right.
And, you know, even if he's a top 20 defensive player in the NBA, which he might be, I don't know if you can really justify that. If you can't do anything on offense, you're not going to make a lot of money. Now, obviously, Ayton is between that. He's really effective on offense, but he's not really the type of offense guy that you think of when you think of a max guy. So, you know, just in general, I'm scared of it. But I think there's a lot of things he can do this offseason or this season that would justify paying him a lot of money. It still focuses entirely on defense for me and effort and energy and the ability to take contact, that kind of thing. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting point about MKG, actually. I'm trying to think of a good comparison. It's like, yeah, you have an all-defense, no offense. Well, honestly, we could draw the comparison to Seth Curry, who we talked about earlier in the episode, right?
Well, like he makes $9 million, maybe?
Yeah, Seth Curry's making $9 million. He's not going to do anything for you on defense versus MKG, who's just out there to lock someone up. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's hard.
And has one foot in the grave, basically. Like, he's almost out of the league.
Yeah, pretty much. I would fall back on basically what Miranda said. It's his own opinion that all defense guy and get to the free throw line, that's a good start.
Yeah.
I don't think you can be so rigid as to say, like, I don't want to give a big man the max. Like, I think that's a ridiculous point of logic. You know, you have to draw a line in the sand somewhere.
Look, I do generally feel that way unless they can do stuff like Jokic where they literally can run an entire offense
on
their own.
Yeah, I mean, it all starts with dribbling the basketball. I need to see him try to I think this segues into the next question well, too. He needs to try to dribble the basketball this year. Just so we can know. Like, it might look terrible. It really might look very bad, but I just want to see it.
I guess a lot of how I feel about max contracts boils down to even the best post-up players are mostly not efficient offenses when you think about those post-ups in a vacuum, other than basically one or two players in the NBA. And it slows down everybody. It's basically like a version of James Harden just closer to the rim, where it's less likely that you can maximize the value of the shot because you're not behind the three-point line. And just mathematically, it becomes less efficient. So what scares me is what you want out of a max player when you have a center is somebody who can run the offense, but what you're sacrificing is a lot to figure out if they can do that, because it might mean that your overall offense gets worse, whereas somebody like Ayton becomes really effective if he just catches lobs over and over and over again. That's pretty effective offensively. But can you just, you know, that's basically Clint Capella, a defensive player who can catch lobs. Can you justify paying that a max? And that's why he has to reach like an Anthony Davis level on defense. Right.
Not unless he's less Clint Capella and more Rudy Gobert.
Right, right. And even Rudy Gobert, I don't think he's going to make a max. Like, I don't think he will. And we'll see, but I think it's unlikely. And the question you were referring to, Superfly_TNT_, said, Anthony Davis was famously a high school point guard before he grew. Do you guys think perhaps Monty could have DeAndre Ayton run point in practice in the preseason? No, I mean, I don't. I basically just said why I think that's a bad idea.
And look, even I'm not willing to go that far, but I just like to see, like, he had a couple of plays where they gave it to him in a handoff, but less at the elbow and more at, like, the top of the key. And then he kind of, like, dribbled into another handoff, like, around the three-point line. I don't know if you can visualize what I'm talking about. But there were a couple of plays in the bubble where I was like, whoa, he took three dribbles. Yeah. Like, that's a big step for him. Mm-hmm. That's three big steps. You know, like, he I would just, literally. And I'd like to see that more consistently. Because that's the sort of stuff that Bam does. That's the sort of stuff that Jokic does. That's the sort of stuff that can comfortably take him to the next level where you feel good about giving him a max contract. Even if, which I think is the likely reality at this point, DeAndre Ayton is a very good defensive player, but doesn't shoulder him with, you know, this weight of, he has to be a top five or a top 10 defender in the entire league in order to justify that contract, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, Bam is a great defender. He's not a top five defender in the league, but he gets away with the max contract because he averages 5 assists per game because he can dribble the basketball. So we need to see him try a little bit.
He also asked, will this team be significantly better at rebounding the ball this season? I think there's a chance that they could be slightly worse rebounding the ball, specifically because they're going to make more shots and that, you know, if they're a better defensive team, there might be more rebounds up for grabs. But I think it'll probably be pretty similar to last season. Maybe I'm wrong here, but, you know, what do you think?
I haven't really thought about this question. My first impression is Jay Crowder is thick, but not like a good rebounder.
Right.
And he's like the big one coming in, right? Let's see.
Yeah, they Chris lost Paul's Frank... not going to get 10 rebounds again.
No, none at all. They lost Frank Kaminsky, but they brought in Jalen Smith and Damian
Jones.
Well,
no Baines.
They'll be fine. Yeah, I mean, Damian Jones can grab rebounds. I don't know. I think it's basically a wash, right?
Yeah,
this
it's
is
about
like
the
a
same.
Surface
That's
level
what I would
analysis.
Expect. Yeah, it's about the same. Here's one thing I will say. Chris Paul, for how good he is at distributing the ball, he's not much of a up and down player. Like, Chris Paul teams actually tend to be more of half court teams than they are transition teams, which in this case hurts a little bit because you still got Devin Booker, you still have Mikal Bridges, but you no longer have Ricky Rubio, who prefers to run a little bit, and Kelly Oubre, who is one of the best transition players in the NBA. Chris Paul actually does like to play a little bit in the half court, so there's a chance that the Suns actually double down their efforts on rebounding instead of trying to run in transition, and that could lead to more rebounds in some cases because they're not as much running back. There's more attacking the glass. I don't know that that's going to be the strategy, but I could see that being.
I don't know that that's the strategy either, but that's the best way another good way for DeAndre Ayton to derive value out of his game, right? Because like you look at, I mean, he's a better rebounder than a guy like Gobert. He's a better rebounder than a guy like Bam, too, for sure. I mean, he's just so much bigger. It's conceivable that DeAndre Ayton goes out there and just averages 14 or 15 offensive, not offensive, right. 14 or 15 rebounds per game, right? Yeah. And that's like, that would go a long way towards getting him to the free throw line as well. Just crash the glass. Right. But like, even so, that still doesn't feel like a max player, you know? You know, like, it's like, Reggie Evans or Ben Wallace were great offensive rebounders. They weren't max players, you know?
Yeah. I feel like we're going to have to put some sort of cap on the total amount of times that we bring up a DeAndre Ayton max this season.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's fair to talk about now before the season starts, but let's try not to.
I think it might need to be like what we did with Mikal Bridges' shot last year, where we put like a moratorium and then we lifted it. We were like, okay, we're not going to talk about Mikal Bridges' shot for 6 weeks and it'll go away. We're just going to pretend it's not there and it'll go away.
Yeah, so we're going to turn DeAndre Ayton into a max player by never talking about it. And then we can take the credit for it. I like it. At Yevgeny Kogosov said, any potential players you have your sights on for the BAE, or do you think they'll opt to use it next year? And he's hoping for a George Hill buyout. I think you got to save it for a potential George Hill buyout. Like, that's the main thing. I think the OKC Thunder are going to do their best to trade him because that's what they're trying to do with everybody. But I'd rather save it, and I think it's okay to even save it for the next offseason. There's going to be free agents next offseason that if the Suns are good and they actually show something, they might be able to get a better player with that BAE after maybe playing some playoff games than using it right now when the free agency market is kind of trash right now. There's really nothing left. So I actually prefer saving it for the season and even taking it into next season. I'm not going to criticize them for at this point. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think they're going to keep the BAE for next year. Yeah, I'm okay with it. I mean, I just don't see... Look, I love Shaq Harrison. You know, I struggle to see why Shaq Harrison is still a free agent with us being 2 days away from training camp. Someone should pick him up. But not a player I'd pick up with the BAE right now. And I just think this team has so much depth already with their 14 current spots. They're cool with the flexibility moving forward.
Yeah, that last spot... And I think we've gotten some questions while we've been in this podcast record that we're not going to get to. I apologize. And I know some people have asked about that last roster spot. I think you try and get basically a coach that could play in a pinch with that last roster spot. So maybe an older player, experienced in the playoffs, either a wing or a big is what
you
I would
floated up Batum earlier today.
Yeah, and then he was signed by the Clippers. Then, so.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't... I'm not a fan anyway, but...
Well, I understand, yeah, and I get that. I do think that when you're looking at vet minimum deals, which we're talking about here at this point, you could get like Batum's 31 and he's got something to prove, so he probably won't play and maybe he will suck, but if he's not like a problem in the locker room and if enough injuries are sustained by this team, he could probably step in and play. And you know, maybe it's better to give a younger guy a chance there, but we'll see. I think of absolute like a veteran who's been around the league for a while is the best fit there, just to be part of the coaching staff, basically. Like Udonis Haslem. I mean, like, James Jones knows. Udonis Haslem, he hasn't played a minute in a few seasons and continues to be signed by the Miami Heat because he's a coach and they can pay him a little extra.
Yeah, I mean, is he really worth it though?
I don't know. It's like they made the finals last year.
I know, but like, with, look,
how do you judge that whether or not they're worth it? Like, how would you know? It's impossible to know.
They can get away with it because they just won the finals. I just feel like with Udonis, that's a special case where it's like, man, he should really just be an assistant coach. Like he is taking, there are only so many NBA roster spots in the league and he is taking a spot away from someone else. That's how I feel about that. But I don't know.
Yeah. It'd be interesting if they checked him in at some point in the season just to foul the hell out of somebody. It'd be kind of fun. At Savage on the Sun said, we're going to fly through these last like four or five here, okay? Is there a case for Cam Johnson to start over Crowder? I think we've covered that. Yeah, I think we've covered that one. So sorry, we already covered that one. At Nathan Bishi, who do you think will get along on this team? Last season was one of the first in a while where he felt like there was a true mesh. They kept a ton of guys. And then he said, will Jay and Booker bury the 70-point beef? I just want to say, just to address that, there is no beef. There is no beef. They're fine. I guarantee that they both understand why they want to play with each other, and they're very excited to do it. And then he said, will Mikhail convert Galloway into a Chipotle stand?
Is there
it
beef
seems like
that?
NBA players just love Chipotle in general.
I don't get it.
It's fine.
It's so average.
They're going to get along. So they're going to be fine.
You know who's going to get along on this team? Jalen Smith and Monty Williams. I don't know why you're laughing. It's like they just are. Like, I think, well, first of all, why are you laughing?
It's just funny. I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Like, I look at his, obviously, I'm going to go and follow Jalen Smith on Twitter. You're well within your right to post whatever you want on Twitter, but like, it's only Bible verses.
Yeah.
Obviously, that guy is going to get along with Monty Williams.
All right, we're an hour and 13 minutes into this record. Are you at least a little bit afraid that's why they drafted him?
What, because he's religious?
Because he's super
what, are
religious.
You worried? Are you worried that people stop listening by now? I don't think...
No, I'm hoping at least some people did.
I don't think that's why. I think... first of all, is James Jones religious? Have we ever researched this?
No, but I met. He did mention in the... press conference that Monty Williams also has a say though.
Yeah, no, I to be honest, I think like I say this now and then I'm gonna get fucked over next year when we try to cover the draft again, but I feel like I have it sorted now. James Jones's drafting strategy is just give me a player who can shoot, who is not a freshman and is ready to go. And
yeah.
You know, like a guy who it was a good college player. That doesn't necessarily always mean they become a good NBA player.
Yeah. And with no personality problems on the record,
right?
I think is a thing.
Just give me
which,
give
by
me
the way,
a
is
clean
that...
shaven young man who can shoot the rock, and
which, by the way, is something that Daryl Morey advocated for in his AMA on Reddit. Which, if you haven't read it, Sam or anyone listening, check it out. It's pretty fascinating.
He advocated for that, or he advocated for James.
Somebody
Jones?
Asked him about his draft strategy, and he said he prefers older players who can contribute right away. And we know he likes shooters, so I think it's just something he mentioned. And I think it makes sense for him, too. He was building potential championship teams at that time. And as we covered with Schmidt, most of these guys, if you're drafting for talent alone, like or potential alone, most of these guys don't really contribute on their rookie deals at all. So if you draft older, you have a higher percentage chance of them contributing on that rookie deal, yada, yada, yada.
Right. Sometimes you don't, though. I mean, if you're Daryl Morey, sometimes you pick a Sam Decker. you know, like he had plenty of those,
true.
Too. It's just you pick a 21-year-old shooter and in the first round. And I mean, hey.
Ty Jerome.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to bring him up next.
At the Mighty Tooge has a few questions for us. Which players would benefit the most from a vegan diet or a beef sponsorship?
I mean, I think anything to get Mikhail off the all Chipotle all the time diet would probably beef up his, no pun intended.
Yeah,
his,
maybe he needs the beef sponsorship is what you're saying.
His all defense campaign.
And who would need the vegan diet? Who's the oldest player outside
Chris Paul already is vegan.
So
right?
If Chris Paul's fine, who's the oldest player outside of him? Jay Crowder, I guess, right? I'll put Jay. I don't want Jay. I want Jay Crowder and the beef sponsorship too. I want him to stay thick. I think we're fine with the amount of vegans we have. Maybe Devin Booker could be a vegan. I'd be
Do
okay.
Do we really
with
not have an older player? I guess like Etuan Moore. He's like 31.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good one. Etuan Moore. He could be a vegan. I'm okay with it. If it extends his career, if it did whatever it did to Chris Paul last year that made him all of a sudden play basically every single game except for two games that were missed not because of injury, that would be remarkable. He also asked, how much faith do you think the front office has in Cameron Payne? I think a little bit, but I think it's different.
What type of faith?
God damn it. That's my worst joke ever. I'll say this. With Cameron Payne, it's different than last year, and I'm going to keep repeating this. The offense fell apart with Ricky Rubio and no Devin Booker. It's not going to fall apart with Chris Paul and no Devin Booker. It's different. It's different. It's different. That means that you could roll the dice a little more with Cameron Payne, and then if it doesn't work at all, stagger the minutes as much as possible, and you'll be fine. You have any other thoughts on that question? We got a few more.
Is Cameron a biblical name?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's not. Had to look it up. Anyway, no, we can move on. We are an hour and 20 minutes into this bad boy.
The Suns had a mediocre defense at best last season. There seems to be high hopes for this season. How good do you see this defense being? I would be surprised if they were like top 10 in defense, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were just out of the top 10. What do you think?
They were 17th last year. Don't you think there's a chance?
That they're top 10?
Yeah.
Small chance. Small chance. I still think, well, actually, yeah. You're probably right. I could see it.
McHale is going to be McHale. Crowder's going to be Crowder.
And Crowder minutes with Chris Paul. That's pretty, yeah, you're right.
I think if Ayton takes the next step, the hurdle,
yeah,
the jump.
The leap.
The leap. The forward. I don't know.
The upshot. We're delirious now.
What were we talking about?
I think they could have a top three offense. If they have a top 10 defense and a top three offense, they're a contender.
Yeah, it's possible. That was my original point.
Do you really
point.
Think that's possible? I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's possible.
I like it. The Suns, let's see. At Battle and Rise said, We have two more. We got through it, so we have to finish. We're this close to finishing.
Okay.
What main differences do you expect to see in the type of offense that ran, that's being run this year compared to last year?
Mm.
What are some ways it will likely be similar? I just touched on it. I think we're going to be slower. We're not going to run as much with Chris Paul. And I think that's okay. And it also sets you up better for the playoffs where you just can't run. And I think more threes. Those are the main differences.
Yeah, more half-court offense, like you said. A little bit more ISO dependent, but like not. It's not going to be Houston. But I do think there are going to be more of those plays. Just, you know, you sub out Rubio for Chris Paul and that's what happens. Yeah, and I think more spot-ups.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay. One question that's not on our list that was asked since we started recording, but it's a good question from a friend of ours. We have to answer it. What would you do on nights where CP3 rests? This is from our friend David Nash. It's a good question, I think, because you can start Galloway, you can start Moore, you can start Cameron Payne. I haven't thought too much about this, but my first thought is I'd start Cameron Payne and just see if it works. And if it doesn't, you know, and if the minutes without Chris Paul with Langston Galloway or Etuan Moore look really good early, then you could do that too. But I still think a secondary playmaker is something that not only do the Suns like, I think Devin Booker likes to have on the floor with him too. What do you think?
I'm going to make Dom from Suns Twitter, you know Dom, happy, mm-hmm. and say, let's go all in on point book.
Yeah,
I think, with these lineups. I think that's what you got to do. I mean, I think there's a real chance for you. Let's see. You really don't mind playing Cam Johnson at shooting guard? Because I could do this right now. I could.
I mean, I wouldn't hate it.
No.
He wouldn't. It depends
actually.
On the matchups.
But here's the thing. No, Cam wouldn't play shooting guard, but McHale could. So you could start Book,
right.
McHale.
On defense.
Yeah. It's Book, McHale, Cam, Crowder, Ayton. Yeah. I think that's the lineup. I don't know. I don't really want Campaign to start ever unless he proves himself to be better than I think he's going to be.
I feel like when these guys are starting like two or three times a season, like it's something that Pop does where he'll put these guys in a position to what he did when he had a good team. He'll put the bench guys in a position to start on a TNT game, specifically to make them try their hardest in front of those audiences when they know they're stepping into big shoes. And then you can point back at that later in the season and say, hey, remember this? When you started and you had 18 points and 8 assists and you were, you know, pushing it on defense every single play, well, we need that from you off the bench every single game. So I think there is like a coaching element where, yes, you're putting Cameron Payne into shoes that are too difficult to fill, but maybe that's okay a few times a season to do that because he's going to push really hard and try really hard in those scenarios, and then you have something to point back at when you're coaching later. So I don't know. I think too much like a coach in that scenario, but I think maybe it would be okay. Any other thoughts before we wrap this really long podcast up?
I do not think so.
I'm very excited for this season. I'll just say that. I'm looking forward to our over-under episode, which will hopefully come out soon as the Vegas numbers come out. We'll have to ask Max about that one, of course.
I already did. He's in.
Oh, yeah.
He's into
perfect.
It.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, we have a tradition with him at this point, so we can certainly do that. I think we're going back to one a week, right?
Yeah, I think so. Unless, you know, hey, some things happen and we have to talk about it, we'll talk about it.
I totally missed what you just said because I was looking up something else. I'm so sorry.
No, it's all good. Basically, I said I'm okay with them keeping that BAE all the way to next season.
Yes,
using
next
offseason.
Yep, okay. 3, 2, 1, bang. Yeah, I think, fuck. I can't do that. I'm so bad at doing that. All right. 3, 2. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think they're going to keep the BAE.